So I just wanted to quickly introduce this project. It's the beginning of my research on contemporary turbo folk, mostly in Serbia. And this is, I am here examining as the relationship between form, ideology, and performance, specifically focusing on visual representations, lyrical representations in music videos. Ultimately, I would like to do more research on reception, especially I'm interested in sort of queer elements of turbo folk and reception of contemporary turbo folk in sort of LGBTQ communities and spaces. The way that I approach this presently is that I am interested in the way that turbo folk is able to perform postmodern ludistic identities. So how within a post-socialist space characterized by anarchistic postmodern playfulness and the influx of American consumerist entertainment. So while these late capitalist developments have largely dethroned high culture as the main locus of national identity production, they have also bred fears about the cultural survival of the nation in an increasingly globalized world. In this sense, the sphere of popular culture and entertainment continues to be produced and negotiated within local, national, and regional frameworks where these are imbued with strongly gendered and ethnicized notions of national community. So, given the simultaneous promotion of entertainment spectacle and ethnic nationalism in the former Yugoslavia, I'm interested in how contemporary forms of popular culture, even as they remain caught in the corporate logic of consumerism, can mediate political activism and offer alternative forms and scripts of identification, especially among young people. So since the post-socialist political elites continue to effectively use ethnic nationalism as a spare basis of legitimacy in a way that casts ethnic others as well as those with non-normative gender expressions and sexualities as a threat to the nation, such analysis of the popular as inherently political becomes especially revealing of new and potentially oppositional post-socialist cultural formations. So I will offer a very brief overview of scholarship on turbo folk. There's actually quite a lot already written about it. And what I will do is I will offer sort of a larger critique of that scholarship at the end. So this is the structure of my argument. So turbo folk in this literature initially emerged as a state-sponsored music genre in 1990s Serbia, tied specifically to ethnic nationalism, the post-socialist mafia elite, and the promotion of patriarchal gender roles. But recent scholarship on turbo folk suggests a more nuanced understanding of this pop cultural phenomena that accommodates a positional post-feminist and queer readings of the genre and its multiple performative effects. So although compelling, I argue that these readings ultimately obscure those aspects of turbo folk performance that glamorize existing social hierarchies and offer narrowly neoliberal modes of feminist empowerment. So, turbo folk, a musical hybrid that combines electronic beats and Western pop melodies with selective elements of Balkan folk music, is certainly the most notorious genre to emerge in the ruins of Yugoslavia, and one that has by now become a sustained object of scholarship. So critics initially viewed turbo folk as a cultural platform created and financed by Milosevic's regime in 1990s Serbia, a form of kitschy escapist entertainment designed to divert attention from the regime's catastrophic policies. Turbo folk connection to Milosevic's regime in particular was evident in the media space given to TV Pink, one of the largest media conglomerates in the Balkans that also remains the largest producer and distributor of turbo folk in Serbia and the region. The connection was further cemented in the public imagination by the marriage of turbo folk's most popular diva, Svetlana Rožnatović, or Ceca, as she's more popularly known, and Željko Rožnatović, also known as Arkan, a notorious Serbian paramilitary commander and gangster who was accused of some of the worst crimes of ethnic cleansing in Bosnia and Croatia by the International Tribunal in The Hague. So Zeta and Arkan's wedding, which took place in the February of 1995, was broadcast by the national television as a media event for national consumption, drawing in millions of viewers and launching Zeta to the status of a turbo folk superstar. After Arkan's death in 1999, Zeta briefly withdrew from the public spotlight, only to emerge as, quote, the tragic figure of Serbian womanhood, loyal to her dead husband and to her children, a patriot and an activist fighting for injustice. So her songs, such as If You Were Wounded, one of her most popular ballads, frequently alludes to her relationship to Arkan and present her as a strong woman, but one whose power is drawn from suffering for her man and her nation. This is a clip from If You Were Wounded. So here you have some lyrics of the song. So in this song, Zeta turns the public censure that both she and Arkan provoke from her critics into a source of strength and survival against all odds, transforming their relationship into an epic romance that is able to transcend death and destruction at the hands of its many enemies. Recently, however, Zeta's more nationalistic turbo-folk has been displaced and challenged by more parodic and politicized iterations of their genre, reflecting the gradual Europeanization of the Western Balkans and mitigation of the nationalist rhetoric from the 1990s in favor of neoliberal values of individualism and free market enterprise. In this sense, turbo-folk has survived its connection to Milosevic's regime, captivating listeners across the former Yugoslav states, and is now becoming a regional, if not global, Balkan music brand enjoyed by a variety of audiences across ethnic, national, and gender boundaries. So, turbo folk music industry has also experienced rapid technical and formal innovations. Music videos, for example, have become much more prominent part of the musical presentation, employing highly stylized sets, cinematic storytelling, and self-referential, parodical, and highly theatrical modes that frequently destabilize the more fixed textual and musical reference. Explicit, threatening, and deviant female sexuality in particular means a dominant feature of both the lyrics and the music videos, where both female and male bodies are framed, fragmented, and displayed as fetish objects for the viewer's gaze. So, turbofolk has arguably become a politically neutralized commercial venture, an increasingly sophisticated and profitable music cultural industry that hardly differs from industry-based pop genres in the West. It takes signs from contemporary Western pop music as well as the historical, cultural, and imagined legacy of the Balkans, including that of the socialist Yugoslavia, where these signs are rearranged, frequently destabilized, and packaged for consumption. So I will briefly sort of explain... I will skip this part. So the normalization of turbo folk and its gradual decoupling from militaristic nationalism of the 1990s has also made it possible to analyze other aspects of the genre, in particular its emergent aesthetic sensibilities such as camp and techno drag, as well as its explicit appeal to queer and female audiences. So, for example, the author of the article "Queer as Turbo Folk," written for the Balkanist, a blog on Balkan culture and politics, makes a compelling case that the creative sector of the Serbian turbo folk industry employs a disproportionately large number of gay men who have worked behind the scenes to make turbo folk thoroughly queer, even as these signs of queer sexuality go largely unnoticed by their genre's straight consumers. Offering a wide selection of flashy and flesh-filled turbo folk music videos featuring assertive dominant divas, men performing in drag, and as much, if not more, naked and muscled male bodies as skimpily dressed women, the blogger cheekily concludes, and I quote, "Who'd have thought that the country we superficially associate with nationalist warmongering, corruption, and NATO airstrikes, thereby forgetting its Yugoslav, Ottoman, and Austro-Hungarian history, would have quite possibly the world's gayest pop music," end quote. Perhaps the most indicative example of the queer aesthetic, as well as of Turbo Folk's frequently outrageous playfulness with sexuality and nationhood, is Mia Borisaljevic's Gruva Gruva, and I will play that one for you. Okay, so this description of the video offered by the blogger is pretty much spot on and deserves to be repeated verbatim. And I quote, "This video, more than perhaps any other, shows how comfortable the genre is with male objectification. The aesthetic is unmistakably gay, and yet the video plays with, subverts, and reappropriates tropes of national identity. It's full of flags and national symbols, yet it's blisteringly homoerotic and explicitly recasts the country as one where men are sex objects and women pull the strings." This alleged queerness of Turbo Folk is also not limited only to the preponderance of cam drag and trash aesthetics. Several Turbo Folk divas have voiced public support for gay rights in Serbia, a position that is widely perceived as unpopular and at odds with the presumed consumers of the genre. The most notorious of these is Jelena Karleuša, or JK as she's known in Serbia. In her 2008 music video Slavka Mala, Cute Girl, there's the lyrics for Gruva Gruva, blast blast. So this is Jelena Karleuša, Slavka Mala, or Cute Girl from 2008. I will show you the very profound lyrics here. So that's that cute girl, she lives in scandal. Every other day she's on the front page, she does same things as I. Hey, 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 hates the entire world, sleeps until 5, cute girl. Okay. So in this 2008 music video, directed by the openly gay producer and Karleuša's longtime collaborator, Dan Milicevic, we see Karleuša backed by a posse of dancers and backup vocalists whose theatrical femininity and androgynous voices effectively renders them into gender ambiguous subjects. It remains unclear whether they are men dressed as women or women dressed as men dressed as women. Indeed, Karleuša's music videos, her lyrics, and her carefully crafted public image rely heavily on disruptive signs of androgyny, transvestism, and deviant sexuality. Jurica Pavicic, for example, a Croatian columnist, thus reads Karleuša's public performance as, quote, "an expression of threatening, dangerous, and uncontrollable femininity that crushes and grinds the mushy and soft masculine element when confronted with the excessive willpower and libido of the fatal one," end quote. So, queer and post-feminist readings of the genre also point out that Turbo Folk divas, both in their song lyrics and performances, challenge traditional models of patriarchal relations premised in traditional love plots and naturalized identities. So rather than valorizing marriage and submission to a macho male partner, the women of Turbo Folk, it is argued, deploy a technically enhanced femininity to fetishize material prosperity and access to capital in post-socialist context, defined by increasingly social and economic precarity. So in many of these songs, there is kind of an emphasis on material prosperity, on having really nice objects. And sometimes these objects are acquired through a partnership, kind of with a strong male. But the male is not the point. The male partner is not the point. It's the things that he buys. Anyway, so this is the part where I kind of deliver my critique of these post-feminist and queer readings of the genre. So, So despite these signs of gender fluidity and reworking of patriarchal roles in turbo folk, I would strongly caution against unambiguously critical or a progressive reading of the genre as a platform for queer and feminist politics, even as the examples I offered here demonstrate some of its contradictory and potentially destabilizing features. Instead, turbo folk should be seen as a mature post-socialist, post-modern aesthetic, one that partakes in similar modes in Western popular culture, such as raunch, trash, and mainstream camp, all of which could be placed under the leaky umbrella of post-irony. So, as Zoe Williams has noted, post-irony is a relatively new development of late capitalist culture, one that echoes the postmodernist critique of grand narratives and foundational truths, including those related to the nature and essence of sexual difference. However, post-irony displaces the previous uses of irony as a form of critical dissent through targeted parody in favor of post-ideological flattening of positions in which there is no privilege or authoritative stance to speak from. So, in similar manner, a turbo folk aesthetic is based on self-conscious quotation, pastiche, and exaggeration of both queer subcultural codes and more hegemonic cultural forms tied to advertising and commodity fetishism. But in a way that evacuates any articulated political stance or any antagonistic relation to dominant gender and national ideologies. So the danger here is not that is not only that these queer codes will be misrecognized by the genre's dominant heterosexual audiences, but the turbo folk divas flirting with marginalized identities stems mostly from their desire to look glamorous, exaggerated, and exclusive. So even in the case of Yelena Karleusha, certainly the most outre and avant-garde of turbo folk divas, the male gaze is frequently deflected by what Jean-Christophe Agnew terms the acquisitive gaze, in which the body of the female singer is equated to a highly desirable commodity as a sign of social power, self-assurance, and control, as in her latest music video, Krimirad. So I'm just going to conclude, since I don't really have a lot of time left. So here we see this sort of techno-drag aesthetic, sort of cyborg femme dominatrix, and this is in her video Krimirad, which is basically, it was, I think, an Indian song originally that was straightforwardly copied, even the words are the same. So again, this is kind of pastiche. So I want to comment on my original sort of, original thesis, so the relationship between form and ideology. So if you look at sort of contemporary turbo folk and compare it to, let's say, not necessarily the beginnings of the genres, which are much earlier in socialist Yugoslavia, but sort of in the 90s, where the genre had perhaps more of a nationalistic content. So it's self-referential, so it gently ironizes previous nationalistic examples of the genre and its social context of emergence. So in Krimirad, you have this sort of mob criminality that is both, you're not sure what is Karleusha, is she referring to her own criminal past? Is it ironizing this context, or is it glamorizing it? There is this sort of ambivalence there. And then with the Gruba Gruba video with Mia Borisavic, you have sort of this kind of packaging of the nation, but it's done in this playful, homoerotic, almost gender subversive way. And then pastiche, I guess, which could be applied to most contemporary industry-based pop genres. So recycle signs from advertising, national folk culture, and queer subcultural practices. And then it's a post-irony. So even though it is gently ironizing, it's a bland, depoliticized parody that merely repeats the injunction to enjoy. So in many ways, a lot of these songs are really about blank enjoyment. It's all about having fun. That's all about kind of, that's the dominant message in these songs. So in terms of kind of these readings, these post-feminist and queer readings, I find that they sort of match the neoliberal post-feminist modes that have been illuminated by mostly Angela McCrobby and other contemporary feminists. So this kind of female empowerment comes from, it's through consumption, through bodily transformation, so plastic surgery, bodybuilding, etc. And then through self-representation, visibility in media, including social media. So a lot of these songs reference event, gossip, sort of a lot of turbofolk divas attract a lot of gossip, and then this kind of gossip gets recycled into this whole celebrity industry. And then I would say that they're pop queer, and you know, we can discuss what is queer. I mean, is there a queer beyond pop queer? Is queer something that's supposedly oppositional to neoliberal practices of consumption? What makes it sort of, I would say, pop queer is that there's this a feminist we is replaced by an unstable she, which McCrobby sees as sort of, and this includes the new status of sexuality and the male gaze as something accepted. So sexualization of the media space, which is now, the feminist critiques directed at that sexualization of the media space are considered outdated or even moralistic or even kind of, you know, prudish. And then this kind of sex positivity, so transgressive sexuality is hinted at, for example, with Karleusha's dominatrix outfits, but it's within this sort of heterosexual script. And I would say that is kind of my Jamesonian critique of the current existing literature on turbofolk. That's it.
Thank you.